The Local Flavor Live podcast is powered by AudioStack, which provides all the tools you need to host, distribute, and monetize your podcast.
Welcome to Local Flavor Live, a podcast about the food and drink scene in Baltimore. I'm your host, Lauren Cohen, and I'm back today with our food and dining editor, Jane Marion. Hi, Jane.
Hey, Elsie. How are you?
I'm good. It was a great week. Royal baby news. I know you were into it. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about it.
I think I found out before the Queen. Such a follower. Wow. I'm just, you know, I follow them on Instagram.
Do you? I love that they have an Instagram page. Yeah. I was actually talking with Meredith, another member of our digital team, about how it's a really good, I think it's a good lesson in social media nowadays. Like, they're using this platform to be able to share, you know, all of their news and everything without, because, you know, it was like a big deal when.
And they're controlling it.
Yeah, when Meghan Markle, yeah. You know, when she married into the family, they told her she had to delete all of her social media, and she had to, her really cute lifestyle brand that she had, I forget the name of it. Mm-hmm. But I think it's great, you know, they can, you know, have this platform to be able to share their news. Obviously, yeah, it's controlled by, you know.
Right. Yeah. No, it's theirs to put out. Mm-hmm. I think there were 2.5 million likes on the initial baby photo with the Queen and Doria Ragland, her mom.
Her mom is the cutest.
Oh, my goodness. I lived in London when I was there my junior year abroad when Charles and Di got engaged.
Oh, wow.
So I was hooked even then. And I have, like, some paraphernalia from those days, like playing cards, royal playing cards.
That you do?
They released all this stuff in anticipation of the wedding. So yeah, I'm a huge fan, and I love Harry as a fellow redhead, somebody with ginger children. I hope that baby has red hair.
It's hard
to tell right now.
Baby Archie.
What do you think of the name?
I think it's cute. It's funny. We were all pulling up, like, there's an infographic that we found online that has, like, the lineage and how. Yeah. So he's seventh in line, and we were, like, counting all of the, you know. But I think it's a cute name.
You do?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's, like, Archie doesn't stand for anything. It's just Archie.
Right.
Like,
it's not Archibald.
Short. Yeah. Right. That's what
I don't know. I felt like there was Arthur as, you know, such a sturdy name.
Yeah.
James, Edward. There's some really great names that I'm sure they could have dipped into the family tree and found something that didn't make late night comics, you know, a lot of joking. I feel a little badly for them, but it'll probably grow on me. It's a little bit shocking right now.
Right.
I think it's shocking in America.
Yeah, yeah.
For those of us that grew up reading the comic Archie.
Right, exactly. So. That's, I think, where, you know, immediately that's where your brain goes. But
yeah.
It's cute. He's adorable. I was looking at his little nose. I mean, you can't see much from the photos, but his little nose is so cute.
I'm excited for them.
Anyway, not food related, but
I
had
watched the wedding.
Yes.
Too.
Oh, I did. I woke up early. That's a whole story. But I wanted to chat with you about it because I know that you're such a fan. So that was an exciting thing this week. And in food news, lots of great openings. Unfortunately, we did see a few closings this week. But on a brighter note, we saw that Larder finally opened. That was the last concept that we were waiting for in Lane Harlan's new old Goucher complex, Soakley. Mm-hmm. So it houses Fat and Sonnen, which is, of course, her natural wine bar that also focuses on sake. And also a couple weeks ago, we saw Sophomore Coffee open there as well. Mm-hmm. And now Larder is there. So this is a concept from Chef Helena Del Pesco. She is so talented. I mean, just looking at their Instagram page and seeing all of the incredible things that she does with pickling and fermenting and, you know, using local ingredients. I mean, just, you know, visually, the aesthetic of her style is just so bright and colorful. And it just seems like it's going to be so wonderful in that complex, which already houses these innovative concepts.
I'm excited to go over there. It's, you know, it's interesting with these hyper seasonal places. Mm-hmm. And she obviously opened at the perfect time of year. Foraged opened, which is a great place. But Chris Amendola opened that in December.
Wow.
You know,
that's right.
Like, what are you going to put on the menu when it's all about, you know, it's called Foraged and you have to find seasonal things. And he got around it. I think was doing a lot of pork early on.
Yeah.
But
that shows how talented he is for sure.
Yeah, but I do think, you know, pickling and fermenting obviously is a way to get around it.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like they have Woodbury inspired roots.
Yeah, for sure. So it's going to be great. I love what you were saying about it being seasonal, and it definitely will be. Just example dishes include in the springtime a crunchy snap pea and asparagus salad, and then for summer a fig leaf infused yogurt pudding with roasted peaches. That all sounds amazing to me. Mm. So I think that Chef Helena just really, is excited to get in there and really showcase those skills and introduce this concept kind of in full swing to people. And the best part, or one of the greatest parts about it, is that it's also going to be a partial retail shop. So there's going to be pantry goods. You can look out for local things like Hex Ferments and Keep All Vinegar, which is the from the Woodbury people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then also some other artisan things that they're having come in from places as far as Oaxaca and San Francisco. So,
yeah.
Because I know Lane has such connections with, Oaxaca and yes. The purveyors there. She's just such a huge champion for, studying that culture and bringing that back to Baltimore. So I am so psyched about Larder. I'm so psyched about Soclay, the complex in general, and, what it brings to the city. I think that it's so innovative, and those three concepts are incredible.
And Keepall actually isn't – Woodbury sells their stuff. But
oh, good.
They're sort of a Woodbury maker. Woodbury
yes.
kind of discovered them.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think these mixed-use spaces are definitely still trending with, restaurants selling retail.
We talked about that last week a little bit.
Right, going back and forth like that. I love these places that are just springing up in these neighborhoods that nobody even knew where they were, like mm-hmm. Old Goucher. I had to look it up on a map the first time I heard the word Old Goucher.
Right.
I too am excited to go over there and check things out.
Yeah, it definitely makes it more of a destination. So it's officially open now. You can go and have a meal at Larder and then go get some coffee at Sophomore and some wine and Sun all in one trip.
I also really like the name Larder because it's one word. It has a nice sound and you can pronounce it. Lately,
yeah.
There have been some restaurants opening that you just don't even know how to pronounce the names.
Right. I still, even sometimes on the podcast, I'm like, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. You're absolutely right. So that is open now. And another news, so we finally have a grand opening date for Phil Hahn's concepts that are going to be opening in Broadway Market. The market itself has been open for a couple weeks now, showcasing all of the amazing renovations that have gone into it. It's such a historic staple in Fells Point. And so finally, we've seen some of the old school vendors that came from the old Broadway market have opened Vicky's Fells Point Deli, Sophia's Place, Sal Seafood, and Thai Street actually just debuted there as well. And next week, Wednesday, May 15th, is the grand opening date for Old Boy and Fat Tiger and El Tigre. And all three of those are concepts spearheaded by Phil Hahn of Doobies. At Old Boy, it's awesome.
I love that name.
Isn't it a cool name? Yeah. So it's actually a nod to a Korean action film.
He
also said the name was kind of twofold in that it also kind of came from the idea that he has learned to appreciate his Korean heritage more as he's grown
yes,
older.
He's spoken with me about that
yeah.
as well. Yeah.
I always love how he, he puts a lot of thought into the names of his restaurants.
Yeah.
So this is going to be an authentic Korean concept that is obviously inspired by his heritage. And then the centerpiece bar that is, directly under this beautiful skylight in Broadway Market is called Fat Tiger. And they it's going to be an all day drink program. So coffee's in the morning. There'll be beer and wine and cocktails. And they're also going to have a new American brunch menu. So they'll kind of share. Fat Tiger is stationed right directly across from Old Boy. So they'll share a kitchen and then run dishes to the bar, but it will have its own designated menu, which is really cool. And then the other thing that I think is awesome is they're doing kind of this like expansion of Fat Tiger outside. So mm-hmm. anybody who's walked by Broadway Market recently has seen the beautiful patio in the front.
Yeah, we were just walking past there today. It looks great.
Beautiful.
Really great. And the kind of place that will attract locals and tourists.
Yes. I think that that's something that people just really look for, especially in the summer months when it's nice. You just want to sit outside. So El Tigre is going to be an extension of the bar program, and they're going to do tiki cocktails outside.
Oh, this sounds wonderful. Yeah. I love the synergy among them, too.
Yes.
I think that's sort of a trend, too. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a little bit of that in Harbor East, like with the Elk Room, Taliata, Italian Disco. It kind of makes sense as a restaurant owner, honestly, you can just be in that one place at one time.
Right.
And look over all your restaurants and share chefs and right?
Yeah.
It all
kind thinking about this too with the opening of Poppy's in Hamden.
Exactly.
And right across the street, Wicked Sisters.
Totally.
So you're right. From an operation standpoint, I think that's great.
It makes sense.
Yeah. But it's super exciting for Phil, obviously super exciting for Broadway Market and for Fell's Point. In general, and that grand opening is going to be on Wednesday, May 15th. They're having a big grand opening party. There'll be a complimentary welcome punch and an ice luge. And yeah, soju and an ice luge. Like, what else could you want on a Wednesday afternoon?
That's awesome. I love the idea of, you know, coffee straight into cocktail hours.
Yeah, and that, you know, the bar's going to have all
of
that.
Continuous flow of fluid, you know. Whatever it is.
Keep them coming. Yeah, and then, of course, outside there'll also be the tiki cocktails on the patio. So great things to come in Fell's Point this summer. So some really exciting openings. Unfortunately, this week we did have a few closings to report as well. Nyoko celebrated its final night of service this week. It's so...
Now, wasn't it Noketo? Didn't it...
This is something that...
Or did it revert to Noko?
So I think that what they did was a couple months ago, they were realizing that Nyoko, our Nyoko in Baltimore was getting confused with another restaurant that had the same name in New York City.
Right.
I think from like a Google perspective as well, like mm-hmm. people were Googling and making reservations at the wrong restaurant.
And who knew? I mean, is it like Gnocchi?
Yeah.
Is that what it's from?
Yeah. It's... Okay. Little dumpling or baby dumpling.
So maybe it's
Italian.
The plural of gnocchi.
Yes. Yeah. And then so they changed it to gnocchetto, but I think unfortunately it just like never really stuck with people.
Right.
Everyone continued to call it gnocco. So I don't really know where that stood.
If that contributed at all to
right.
their demise.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there were a lot of changes throughout its 3-year run, but I had a really good conversation with the chef, Brian Lavin, this week. There's a blog that we posted on our website just kind of going into detail about all the reasons if anybody wants to check it out. But it seems like he's content. So basically what happened was last summer, he and Sam White, the general manager mm-hmm. who also headed up the bar program, they were faced with this decision of whether to buy their building from their landlords or to kind of – it's in Highland Town.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in Highland Town. Okay.
And so, yeah, they could either buy the building or keep it open but also, you know, decide not to buy it. And so what they were thinking was the kitchen there is so, so tiny. So they were thinking that they could look around, maybe try to find a bigger space that they could mm-hmm. move into, but also, you know, keep it on the market. If anybody wanted to buy it, then they could go from there and kind of roll with the new owner and with whatever they wanted to do. But it sat on the market for a really long time. It didn't seem like there was very much interest. And at the same time, I think that it really caused them to kind of think about what they wanted to do personally. And Brian... has a sister that lives in Beverly Hills who's a pastry chef there.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds promising.
Yeah. So his plan is to go move to the West Coast to be with her. Yeah. He was telling me that he just, you know, it's really exciting to him to look at the produce there and to look at, you know, what a thriving scene it is there. And he was just like, I'm still relatively young. I don't want to wake up one day thinking that I could have explored something new and I didn't, which is totally understandable.
I'm happy for him that he had somewhere to land that sounds really promising too.
Mm-hmm.
I always enjoyed my meals at Noko.
Me too.
Haven't been in probably about a year and a half.
Yeah.
Best Negronis ever.
Yes, they're great. The pastas, the antipasti dishes, just everything that came out of that kitchen, you could tell was made with a lot of love.
Yeah.
That sounds really cheesy, but when you can feel it.
I didn't always love the space. The dining room was a little cozy. Windowless, mm-hmm. I think. The bar area was really nice. Mm-hmm. That's sort of where you wanted to sit.
And that big chalkboard or whatever with the mm-hmm. logo. It was
but
beautiful.
It's a little bit under the radar, I think, as a place.
Yeah.
But I know whenever, people would go, they'd say they liked it.
Mm-hmm.
We had him on doing a couple TV spots to help us promote best restaurants, and he'd bring food that we'd try, and we wish him well.
We definitely do. Yeah, it's definitely a hit for the neighborhood. I think, the people that are really upset about it were the people who kind of made it a point to go once a week or, but it's a good reminder, even with us, we're sometimes in our own neighborhood bubbles, and I think it's just good to remind yourself, if you love a place, go.
Exactly.
Go there and eat there and,
support your neighborhood.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. 100%. I have to tell myself that all the time, too. So that was a sad one. And also Prime Corner is closing at the end of the month. That was another one that came in this week.
Not open very long.
It wasn't. I think I was counting. It was like 8 months. I think they opened in September. So this was right on the corner of Chestnut Avenue and 34th Street. It's like you can't miss it. The owner, Tess Russell, she commissioned an artist to do a really beautiful mural. It's very funky and colorful. And so they were known for artisan goods. So she brought in a lot of local makers like Taharka Brothers and Lunchbox Lady and Neapole, all of these great people to sell their goods there. I wonder what went wrong. Mm. I think maybe, the clientele in Hamden just,
Right.
It's a high-end product that she was selling, you know. So it's sad. I think she's going to continue throughout the end of the month, and then we'll see what will become of it. I think that it was great when it was Play Cafe. Do you remember that?
I do,
yeah. Right before Prime Corner, it was this beautiful, very kid-friendly neighborhood space where parents would take their kids and they would have playtime and toys and reading groups and things like that.
Yeah, and you think about, people come into Hamden, they're really going to the restaurants.
Right.
And to Trove or to the Atomic Books is over there, mm-hmm. right? But, mm-hmm. A grocer, and then for locals living around there, I heard the prices were really high.
Right, yeah.
Maybe you would go once and buy a bag of granola, but you're not going to do your whole food shopping there.
Right. For me, it was more of a place where, if I wanted something specific and I knew that they carried it there,
exactly.
I really appreciated it.
Yeah.
So things like Taharka Brothers ice cream, if you have a craving for that and
totally.
You don't want to go to a grocery store or wake up early to go to the farmer's market or wherever it may be sold. That was always a luxury, I think, for people.
But even some of the markets, like Growls has kind of become one of my new favorite markets.
Yeah, I love Growls.
And I kind of just recently rediscovered it, but I live near the one in Ruxton. And what I love about it is they have all the regular supermarket stuff that, say, a Giant would have. But they also have tons of local products. They have the Woot granola. They have the Mouth Party caramels. They have Taharka Brothers ice cream. They have all those things, but they're a big market.
Mm-hmm.
So a little grocer like Prime Corner probably, couldn't, if that was their niche, it would be hard to compete with, with a bigger market.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that makes so much sense. So I guess we'll see. We'll see what happens there. But that is really sad. Mm-hmm. Everybody get there before they close at the end of the month.
And
go get your favorite.
Didn't Trove sells some specialty items as well?
I think so. Yeah. Right in the
jars
in the front.
Of this and jars of mm-hmm. that. Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's always nice. So always sad when we have closings to report, but that's the nature of things. But on a little bit of a happier note, I spent some time this week reporting about Remington and RemFest, which is a big festival that they started doing last year in the spring. And they, recently brought it back for year two. And it was really great connecting with a lot of the old school restaurants that are in Remington and talking to them about how the neighborhood has changed.
Yeah.
So I loved the Diz. I was just going to say I loved in particular talking to Elaine Stevens, who's the general manager there. She's been there for 27 years.
Really? We should
hang out with her a little bit more, I think. She is amazing. She's so great to talk to. She has the best like Baltimore accent.
They have such a good crab cake in there.
They do. Yeah. They do. This is awesome. Like the burgers, you know, if you just kind of want to grab a quick bite with people, it's amazing. It's really, and I always love in the winter when they have their Christmas lights display.
Yeah.
It's like so over the top.
My son used to work across the street at Charm City Cakes. He was a cake decorator.
Right.
So I would pick him up. He was still in high school and we would go to the Diz for a burger or crab cake.
Yeah, that's so great. But yeah, so Elaine was one of the people I talked to for the story about RemFest. And, you know, she was saying she has loved really taking a front row seat to see the neighborhood evolve. And, you know, it now has Our House, which is such a draw for people, mm-hmm. and all of these boutique retail shops and green spaces. They recently put up that huge mural at Sisson Street Park, which is beautiful. And I also spoke to Suraj Bhatt, who is the owner of Sweet 27, which mm-hmm. people love. And
it's been around for a while.
Yeah, and Dan Scott of Charmington's, of course. So it was awesome. I really loved talking to them and, you know, what they said about the festival kind of tied into their sentiments about the neighborhood. Just, you know, it's such a place of community and, you know, people coming together. And I think that the festival really, you know, it exemplifies that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So really cool. And, you know, recently we sat down to talk about our best of Baltimore list, which can be crazy for people to think that we're already, but we work very hard, very, very much ahead. So I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about that because I know that's something.
You know, we tear our hair out every year. It's like the weight of the world is on us. You know, who should get best ice cream?
Yeah.
Who should get best bar? You know, and every year we like to salute our local businesses that are just hitting it out of the park. So this is, you know, a new year, new winners. Sometimes there's some duplicate winners. But mm-hmm. For me, at least, I'm sure for you, I think for all of us, it's an ongoing process. It's not just like, oh, it's August, we have to write this issue. It's sort of like all year long, we're out there eating, drinking, interviewing chefs, going behind the scenes to kitchens, keeping, I know at least I keep kind of a running list. If I go and I eat something that's really terrific, I'll make a note of it because then when the time comes, I may have forgotten.
Yes.
But I know you said you look at your Instagram account.
Yes, yes. Jess, our digital editor, who's a huge part of this process, she was telling me she looks at her Instagram account. I like to look back at what we've written throughout the past year. I know you're similar that way. Just looking at our blogs and you know, what we've covered online and just picking out highlights of people who are really, you know, just going the extra mile and are just so deserving of this award.
And it means so much to them. Like, it's really great when, you know, we give someone best hardware store and then you walk into that little hardware store that's still surviving despite Lowe's and Home Depot and the internet. And there it is. There's the reward framed front and center. And
I love seeing the plaques. That's amazing.
It means so much to them. And sometimes those signs have, you know, yellowed. They've been up there for decades.
Right.
And you forgot that you even gave them the award, but there it still is, collecting dust in the corner.
Yeah.
My first year of writing, I did, you know, I've done food now for years, but prior to that, I used to do service. I've done beauty. I think I did fashion at one point. I've been writing it for 20 years. And my very first year, I did service with another editor here, Ken Eigelhart, and we divided up our categories. And my husband had, I think, an old Saab at the time, and we had just moved here, and we were looking for a good mechanic. So he, you know, had been telling me all about this mechanic, and I gave them Best of Baltimore. And then when I told him that I'd given the guy Best of Baltimore, he said, "Jane, that's the guy that mounted my tires backwards."
Oh my gosh! What?
And I was like, "Oh, wait a minute! I thought you told me you loved that guy.
Oh,
he was
no.
so great."
Oh,
so,
no,
we're not always perfect, but
right.
I no longer write about service.
Yes, you found your niche. That's so funny.
But we always find that we have more. You know, more awards to give than space in the magazine, which says a lot about Baltimore.
Yes.
And every year it gets harder because there's so much growth here. And then you also want to recognize the old timers. And we really could do this every month.
You're right.
Maybe we should.
Yeah. Yes. But no, you're absolutely right. There are so many people who are so deserving of it. So it's hard to narrow down our list to such a finite number. But it's a cool process, and it's always exciting when, you know, you see the reactions from people after they get the magazine.
Yeah.
And even like you were saying about the plaques, I was thinking sometimes I'm like driving and I'll see like, you know, service trucks and vans that have the logo
right.
from whatever year they won. And
yeah.
It's just, it's so special.
Or sometimes they'll quote you, they'll put your information in their marketing material, right. which is fine. It's complimentary.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
It just, but you know, we don't make these up. You
right.
know, if we are recommending
right.
a sandwich or a pizza, but it's because we've eaten it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're recommending a dry cleaner, it's because we've used that dry cleaner.
Yes.
But sometimes I feel that my memoir is in Best of Baltimore because, you know, in those early years when I was writing it, it was places. I had three kids in three schools. So it was anywhere on that route. I used to call it the Bermuda Triangle because that was my life between my house in Lutherville.
Carpools
to the city. And then I had a kid in Owings Mills. So any, you know, services, businesses, restaurants that were in that Bermuda Triangle were places that I naturally went to.
Right.
And then in the 20 years that my house was falling apart, my 1940s fixer-upper, I pretty much had every HVAC guy, you know, roofer, mm-hmm. plumber, electrician come through. And I was always so grateful for the good ones.
Yes.
So,
Yeah. So. You lived it. And that's how we feel about the food and drink categories, too. You know, we have these great experiences and we want to share them with all of you. So, it's an exciting time.
So what was your best bite this week?
My best bite. I actually went up to the snowball stand, the one that we've been talking all about in Hamden.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't seem super
Chad's.
Exciting. Chad's snowball stand. He was there slinging snowballs. Like he's on a Friday
he have
night,
on a baseball
too.
Cap?
I think so. I'm not sure. But, you know, like a Friday night service, he could have been across the street at the food market, but he's helping
well,
out.
See, there you go again. It's all right there for him.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, yep. I see a
like
trend.
What we were talking about. It's definitely a trend. But anyway, so they have the menu of like the classics. So, you know, egg custard, chocolate, skylight, those things. But they also have these specialty snowballs that come with like the torched marshmallow on top and like brownie pieces. There are so many crazy toppings. I got one. It was a chocolate-covered strawberry snowball.
Oh.
So the ice was chocolate-flavored and strawberry-flavored ice, and then they topped it with fresh strawberries, whipped cream, and chocolate syrup. And I loved it.
It's delicious.
Yeah, the whipped cream was a little weird just because I think I'm used to mm-hmm. marshmallow, you know,
right.
just like classic Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
So having whipped cream on a snowball was just a little different for me, but I loved it. I think it's going to be, you know, it's still, I don't think we're there yet where it's like scorching summer weather yet, but when we get there, it's going to be such
well,
an asset.
Yeah, actually, I think this is the ideal time to eat ice cream because it
yeah.
is warm, but it's not going to
melt
so quickly that you have to eat it quickly.
That's
brain
the worst
freeze.
Part about
it
a
is.
Snowball, too. If you
yeah.
don't eat a snowball fast enough, it literally turns into water.
I think
water.
Maybe that's why I don't love them, honestly.
Yeah.
I know I'm going to get kicked out of Baltimore. I know.
That might be your one, your Achilles heel.
But it is a pet peeve, like melty, melty ice cream on a hot summer's day. Much as you want it, you might as well get a milkshake because that's what it becomes.
That's what it turns into.
Seconds. Well, I took myself to Annapolis.
Yes, I want to hear all about
this. I had a really wonderful lunch at a little place called Flamant, which means flame in French.
Lovely.
It's in a little bungalow that used to be a children's clothing store and toy store, and it's in West Annapolis, kind of right at the top of the street, just as you're about to drive into historic Annapolis. It's owned by a Belgian chef, Frederick Dupuy, and it's love the menu. I'm actually reviewing it right now. But anyway, for lunch, I had a bowl of mussels and frites. I think one of my favorite lunches.
Can't go wrong. Especially when you're dining solo. I think that that's like the best lunch.
It was really great. And you can, you know, mussels, you really can sort of linger over them. But the way they were served, you know, what you think, what can you do with mussels? But they looked like they had tumbled across the beach in seaweed. And when they were served, it was a bowl of mussels that were sort of tangled with these threads of leek and then rosemary sprig. So it mimicked seaweed. I mean, it really did look like seaweed on top. It
was just the texture sounds amazing.
It was just beautiful. And you know, you and I have talked about Instagram moments, but I'm sure that's behind part of it. But it was just so visually appealing and wonderful. It was in a white wine broth and with the frites and the guy's Belgian, so perfect.
Good. You know, a they lot have of, to be good.
Yeah, you know, French fries were invented by the Belgians, not the French. So contrary to popular belief, so not too thick, not too thin, really crisp, super salty in a good way, sturdy enough to dunk. I didn't eat them all. I took some home and reheated them the next day.
That's how you know that they're good, if they were good reheated. So that's great.
Yeah, it's a great spot. Wow. I highly recommend it.
What a great best bite. But thank you so much, Jane, for sharing your best bite and chatting with me. Hopefully next week we have more royal baby news to talk about. Or not.
Hopefully Kate Middleton will be pregnant next
week. Oh, so sweet.
Another baby on the way.
I love dishing about that with you. But thank you, everyone, so much for listening to us. And you can pick up a copy of our May issue, which is still on newsstands now. And also check out all of our food coverage every day at BaltimoreMagazine.com.
Local Flavor Live podcast is powered by AudioStack, which provides all the tools you need to host, distribute, and monetize your podcast.